This is Pearls and Swine on Good News You Can Use. I'm Levi. Across from me sits Lisa, and to my right is Travis. And today we're going to be talking about one of the craziest dudes in the Bible that no one really says is that crazy. But if you actually see and read what he actually does, he is one bold, bold dude and really puts his life on the line. He's actually found in the Old Testament. You ever met somebody who's just like unreasonably bold?
In a good way?
Not like in the weird way.
Yeah, because I've met lots of people that are just oddly bold in a really odd way.
Yeah. What about in a really good way? Those are a different category.
It is.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you think about the people who are constantly talking about Jesus in a really bold way, right? They have been given the gift of evangelism or something like that, and they're just like out there wearing a big Jesus pin, telling everybody how good God is.
Some of those people are a little crazy, but...
Yeah, good crazy, yeah. Though.
Yeah, usually that boldness comes with something that makes you feel uncomfortable when you're approached by them.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, you know, I just love something about you, and you're like, I don't know you, and I feel like I should run away right now.
Right.
And the answer to that is you probably should.
Yeah.
Well, this guy is bold in a really good way. And so we're going to read a passage of scripture and just kind of unpack his boldness and unpack how he got to this place of boldness. And so last week, we were talking just a little bit about him, and he began to pray because he was broken. And he was broken for his people and for his city. And this week, he has this really crazy boldness. But one of you guys want to start with just the first couple of verses, and then we can unpack it?
Yeah. So
this is Nehemiah chapter 2.
And just the first couple here?
Yeah.
So in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was brought before him, I took the wine and gave it to the king. I had not been sad in his presence before, so the king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you're not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of the heart."
Yeah, so there's this sadness going on, and if you read that and you don't know the historical context of this is the king of Persia, and one of the rules is you can't be sad in front of the king. You can see it in Esther. Mordecai has sackcloth. He can't even go into the courts where the king could possibly be. And it's just like really, really frowned upon, because part of it was, if you're in the king's presence, you should always have a smile on. That's how I feel about me. Like, if you're in my presence, you should have a smile on. Yeah. That doesn't work very well. But it's in their culture, if you were not that, it was dangerous to you. You could be thrown out. That would be kind of the lesser of the evils, or they could execute you right there. And so he is in the month of Nisan, which is March or April, and he's never been sad in front of the king before. He's been serving the king as the cupbearer, kind of one of the most trusted positions you could ever possibly think to be, right? Can you imagine that? Like, you got to trust the guy that is testing your wine, right? Or testing your food. Like, you got to trust him, obviously, with your life. Number one, that he's testing it. And number two, that he tested it and he didn't poison it. And so there's a relational component there that he has with the king. And
yeah,
the king,
I never take a drink from Judah when he's like, "Hey, mom, try this drink." I never do that.
No.
Sorry.
No, that's probably wise on your part. But the king, he so notices him. The king asked me, "Why does your face look so sad when you are not ill? This can be nothing but sadness of heart." And that little phrase there, I think, is really fascinating. Because it could be sadness of heart. What the king is actually asking him, he's like, "Hey, wait, you're not sick. Are you feeling guilty? You feeling guilty? You can't kill me?" I think that's what he's actually asking. Like, it only can be sadness of your heart, because they have some type of a relationship within this thing. So the next verse says, "But I said to the king, 'May the king live forever. He says this to show his alliance, and it goes back to that, did you poison me question, to put the king's mind at ease. The king said to me, what is it that you want? This is verse 4. He has the king's attention at this point. He's walked in there. He's sad. What he's not supposed to do. The king asked him this question. Hey, you know, what is it that you want? And right before that, he prays. And he has the king's attention. And what does Nehemiah do? He says, then I prayed to the God of heaven. And this isn't like a long, laborious prayer. This is one of those breath prayers. This is, oh, crud. Oh, yeah. Crud. Oh, crud. Here we go. Here we go. I think it's interesting because chapter one, you have like this big long prayer, and you kind of see, I really think, his prayer journal over these 4 months that he's kind of hanging out, fasting and praying and just brokenhearted. And then you have this moment where he's going to take action, what he believes God is calling him into. And he's like, to the God of heaven, you know, he prays. And he really is, I think, just this, God help me. And I think have you guys had those prayers before where you're like, Lord, help me now?
Oh, yeah. You're going into something scary or unknown and you're just faced with it, or you're having a tough conversation that you're like, I wasn't planning on this, wasn't anticipating this thing. And then it's right at your face and you're like, oh, Lord, I need you right now. And he had to have known, Nehemiah had to have known his plan coming in, right? So he's probably got that pit in his stomach. He's like, I'm going to do something crazy here.
Yeah.
And just feeling that angst of it all. And then he's like, God, I would imagine he's like, God, I need courage right now. Give me boldness. Like, and what better spot for him to turn to? Like you said, he's been fasting and praying, and now it's kind of go time for him. So he turns to the Lord.
So if you were to rate yourself, are you better at the longer prayers or the breath prayers? Because I think one of those are probably our inclination. He shows both, but which one would you say, hey, this one's really a little bit easier to me?
Breath prayers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on the moment, because like I said, there's those moments where it's just, oh, crud, you're facing something. And that, I mean, you see it, what is this, the line, there's no atheist in foxholes, right?
Yeah.
So when you're faced with that moment, and this, you know, this is a potentially life or death situation, so is a foxhole. But for us, it's usually not those things. But yeah, I mean, like the longer prayers, I think that's kind of more my natural tendency. But I do have those old crud moments where I'm like, God, I need you to show up, and I need you to show up now. Don't know what to do. Don't know what to say.
Yeah, I think I'm probably the longer prayer guy too. And it's not as spiritual as you think. It's because when I get up in the morning at 4:30 in the morning, I'm actually trying to fall back asleep. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this time to pray. And usually it's 45 minutes. And for some reason, I wake up at 4:30 every morning, and that's my time. And the other part of it is once I get up and I get going, I'm just, you know, 100 miles an hour, and I forget the dependence upon God on the daily moment type stuff. And I have to be reminded often of that to slow down there, buddy. And so, yeah,
I'm glad that you confess that, because it makes me feel more comfortable confessing mine as well, because mine is usually at night. Okay. And it's like, it's time to go to bed. I know I'm tired, but you can't shut your mind off. So I just start talking to God. And then this is my confession part. I usually fall asleep somewhere in the middle of that.
Yeah, there's something sweet about it, something peaceful about it. But he Nehemiah gives kind of both of those in the picture. And the king answers, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in his sight, let him send me to the city in Judah where my ancestors are buried so that I can rebuild it. And so that's a pretty bold request. Basically, at this point, he's asking for a sabbatical from his job, from one of the most trusted positions in there. And he kind of leans, I think, on the king's ancestors. Like, the king wanted to know his ancestors, knew his, you know, where they were buried. And he's like, hey, if it pleases you, can I do this too? Type of a thing. And then it goes on. Someone else want to read the next couple of verses there?
Are we at verse 3?
No, we're in verse 6.
Oh, okay. Sorry. And the king said to me, the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple, and for the wall of the city, and for the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, for the good hand of my God was upon me.
Like, he's asking some pretty bold things. One, can I have a sabbatical? And he's actually gone for, how long has he gone? 12 years? So that'd be sweet, right? God, can I have a sabbatical for 12 years? And the next thing he, you know, in that time period, like wood was like a very valuable commodity. And he's like, can I have like millions of dollars worth of goods? And then he says, hey, can I have your signature so I can get through all of these things and it won't be a big deal? And it's just crazy to me the boldness in which he asks this thing. And I wonder, you know, I wonder how he gets that bold. But if you jump back to chapter 1, in that 11th verse, it says this, Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of this your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight in revering your name. Give your servant success today by granting him favor in the presence of this man. And this is the most this man that he's talking about is the most powerful man in all of humanity at that point. And he recognizes who God is. And he recognizes that this guy is just a man and is not outside of God. And I think that prayer that he's been fasting and praying for these last 4 months informs his boldness.
When you see that, like, the Lord's really given Nehemiah compassion for the people, and as we walk through this second chapter, that's what really ignites his courage. And I think that's a pretty beautiful picture. What he's asking the king, though, is not a small task. I mean, we know that his goal is to rebuild that wall in Jerusalem. And I'm looking at kilometers. So kilometers and meters, it's like 13 feet thick, 40 feet high, and whatever 4 kilometers is in miles around. And that's, I mean, he's not, like you said, it's millions of dollars. It's years of time off. This is no small ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we go back to how many months it is between the time, you know, it's like 4 months between the time that he hears the news and he goes to the king. He's been thinking about and praying for this for 4 months. It's not, and that to me says, he doesn't like rush in once he hears the news. He has been calculating in his ask. And I imagine, I mean, the more you pray for something believing it, the less impossible it seems if you believe that God is who he says he is. And so he's been saying, God, I know you can do this. These are the things that we need, and you know that we need this. And he's been saying that for 4 months. And so by the time he gets to the king, of course, it's just a breath of a prayer, you know, because he knows that God can do it and has promised much to his people.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that there's something just really interesting about the ask, because it's, you know, I don't know about your mama, but my mama told me, he's like, what's the worst that someone's going to say to you? No. Well, the worst for him was he's going to get his head cut off. So, most of the time it's like the things that we need to ask, it's just like a no, you know, like that's the worst that they're going to do. And, yet he is willing to risk for these people, and it's not for his benefit. Like his immediate benefit. Like that's the weird thing in my mind is like, it's one thing to pray for something that is like, you know, oftentimes I'll pray for something that I need or I'm desiring or whatever, but it's a whole nother thing to begin to pray for something that is not your immediate desire or your immediate, you're going to get immediate reward for it. And I think that's one of the things that you see in Nehemiah is he's faithful in praying for something. He's willing to take a risk for something that really didn't affect him immediately. And I don't know. That's just fascinating to me.
He also has a very, an unusual understanding of the long-term prophecies. You know what I mean? He understands scripture and what has been promised to the people of Israel in such a way that his prayer is necessarily not looking for instant gratification. He knows that God's promises may take quite a while, and he's so sure in who God is that he can pray that long prayer.
I think some of it comes off of the legacy of Daniel, you know, and so he's after Daniel. Daniel's praying three times. He's praying toward Jerusalem. God restores, bring us back, keep doing this. And he has the writings of Daniel at that point. And so he's reading this, understanding this, knowing God's word in this. And I think it's really cool to kind of just see how he's faithful in the midst of that, just to go, man, I'm willing to do this. And he faithfully planned. I think that's one of the things in his prayer time for that 4 months. He's faithfully planning, and he was able to give the king in it how much time. And he knew how much resources, he knew how much time he would need. And what's amazing is Nehemiah's faithfulness produced something in him that allowed for him to be faithful in that moment of the ask. Because he was faithful way over here, going, God, I see this as a need. I believe that you can answer this. And it was something that transformed him before he was ever able to do the bold ask. Faithfulness, I think, also produces something in us. And I think you see a vulnerability or a dependence from Nehemiah. You see this, you know, he is faithful, not only in the prayer, but he's faithful doing his job, right? Like he goes to work every day. And prior to that day, he'd never been sad. He had never not produced at his job. Even though it was not the situation that he believed he needed to be in, he felt like God was calling him to go and do something. He was continually doing that. And I was thinking about that in my own life. Like, when I have a situation that I don't like, what do I want to do? I want to get out of the circumstance instead of being faithful in the circumstance. And so if you're a stay-at-home mom or dad and you're like, this is horrible or this is wonderful, I don't know where you're at with that. Maybe it's a split day for you. I don't know. But like, are you just being faithful in the midst of where God has called you and planted you in that moment? If you're a student, are you going, man, this is a time of preparation for me, and I'm going to put and pour all my time into this situation. I don't have the relationship maybe I want, or I don't have the degree I want right now, but right now I'm just going to be faithful in what God has called me into. And I think that's one of the things that Nehemiah does, is that he's faithful as being that. And he's also, he's really vulnerable in that moment. But he's vulnerable with God first. If you remember from chapter 1, he confesses, he's praying for his sins, he's praying for the sins of the people. There's this level of vulnerability that he has with God that I think informs his vulnerability with the king.
That's really good. I think so often we have a tendency my tendency isn't to run to God first, just being honest. And so what I try to do is I either try to figure it out myself or control the situation, or I call in the human resources that I have to do it, to take care of it. And that's really good what you just said, that he's first vulnerable with God, knowing that God is the one who ultimately can take care of it. And then he goes to whatever means he has in order to resolve the situation and the resources that God has provided for him.
Yeah, I think when you're vulnerable before God, I think things start to come into perspective. The situational stuff comes into perspective. I think he's going, man, I believe God can do this. And whether he does it or he doesn't through me, I believe this and I hold to this. And this is not that big of an ask. I don't think he thinks it's that big of an ask. Because I don't know how you ask that without stuttering and stammering. And, well, you know, give me a sabbatical of 12 years and millions of dollars and sign this piece of paper, you know.
We also don't know how many drinks he'd poured for the king up leading up to the ask.
This is true. Yeah, I think when we're honest and we're dependent, and I think that was the other thing that you see, is this vulnerability leads to this dependence upon God. That's why he prays the breath prayer. And you can become vulnerable with the rest of the world. And part of, Lisa, you lead a recovery group, and habits, hurts, hangups.
Yep.
We all have them. But part of the recovery process is admitting and confessing and recognizing that we're dependent upon God. And for so that's the other thing that I see within this thing. And the beginning of a restoration project like this, it's prayer. Prayer begins the restoration results. And he's not, without prayer, I'm not sure he gets all of those things. Without prayer, I'm not even sure he asks for all of those things.
Well, that's what I was going to say, kind of his order of operations was prayer, planning, the big ask, and then the restoration or repair. And I'm with you, like, my typical default is, oh, problem, let's just go right into repair mode. And I missed the first two. And you, like you said, you miss out on so much of that. And really, it's probably because of a self-preservation technique that we have ingrained in us, because you don't have to admit there's a problem that within yourself. It's just like, nope, God, you can come along for the ride instead of saying, God, where do you want me to go and bless and be with me through this thing? So,
yeah, I think part of it is that vulnerability before God brought courage to him to ask. And he got more than he could ever imagine on his own. That's the beauty of it. Like, that's one of the promises of God, is that he can do more than we can ever ask and ever think or ever dream. He can do things that are just crazy that we could never put together ourselves. And I think this is one of those where I don't think he could have went, I'm going to get a sabbatical, I'm going to get millions of dollars, I'm going to have, you know, whatever, the king's signature on all these papers that gets me.
And the protection.
Protection of that, you know, the 52 days that it takes to rebuild the wall. I'm going to get a new house in this thing. There's lots of things inside of this. And I wonder if we don't understand the greatness of God, and I think you start to understand the greatness of God through prayer, your vision becomes small. It shrinks to what you can accomplish on your own and not on what he can accomplish. And the courage to ask, to be this bold, to be a bold dude like Nehemiah, always starts with prayer. And it always starts with us being vulnerable before the Lord. This is good news you can use. I want to encourage you to pray. Be bold in your prayers. Ask big things as you really seek the Lord in your lives today, tomorrow, and for the rest of this week and for the rest of your lives. And just one question as we leave. Are you being bold with your prayers? And are you asking God for much? Because he's a good, good father.
Thanks for tuning in with us this week. We would love to hear from you. If you've got any questions or comments or topic ideas that you'd like us to cover, email those to travis@evangelup.org. If you want to catch up on any of the previous Pearls and Swine episodes, you can go to evangelup.org or search out Evangel Houghton on your preferred podcast platform.